Lifeguarding and swimming, I think both of those lifestyles really go hand in hand with each other. But living those lifestyles for the past 4 years, like absolutely, I've taken a lot from that, which has for sure like transferred into the Marine Corps world. Being able to remain calm under pressure, and that was a huge one for lifeguarding. Like you might run into a terrible, terrible situation where like somebody's dying, and you have to be able to be that person when everybody else is freaking out to just keep things level-headed. Like you can't be the person who is about now freaking out with everybody else, because then like that situation, it's not going to work. Like you have to have the ability to be calm under pressure, have a level head, and then just being on a team, that's another huge one that's transferred to the Marines. With a huge emphasis on being able to collaborate with others, having a trust in between you and the person to the left and and to the right, knowing that like you have each other's backs no matter what, and then just being able to cooperate with others too. That all has it's kind of weird how much it parallels to the Marine Corps. Like those things really like they really line up. And I'm really grateful for the life that I've got to experience the past 4 years, because I do think you find a lot of these similarities, and you do have a feeling of like you've kind of been here before, but now you just get to refine these skills a little bit more. You got me?
Got you, Tink.
Let's go. How's it going?
So good to see you.
It's so good to see you. How are
Epic.
you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing really good. Really good. It's great to see Wilmington face again.
For sure, 100%. Let's get right into it, and then we're just like we'll catch up on the program. Sound
All
good?
right. Sounds
Okay.
good. Yeah.
Ready? Welcome to Speaking from Water, episode 47. I'm your host, Sean Rutke. And guys, today we have a straight legend, a weapon, a person I'm very honored to call a teammate and a friend. She is a champion swimmer on the collegiate level. She is a champion lifeguard on the national level. And she is currently serving our country and the United States Marines. Andrea Tink Nabel, thank you so much for joining us.
Rakay, it is an absolute privilege and honor to be here. Great to hear from you, and I'm really excited to get this going for sure.
Yeah, and look, like the last time we really hung out, we were walking on our way to the victory celebration in Virginia Beach at Nationals. We had just crushed it. Our team, Wrightsville Beach Ocean Rescue, came in first in the nation. It was a great honor to compete with you and everybody there. And I was like, Tink, you just graduated. What's up next for you? Not expecting you to say this, but you said, I'm joining the United States Marine Corps. And since then, you've done it. You've gone through basic training. And I want to start there before we go into your past and your history, because I'm super interested to see what you or hear what you've done since we left off. So again, welcome and thank you dearly.
Yeah, for sure. So, like you said, kind of towards the back half of summer, that's when things started to pick up. So I kind of started with the whole Marine Corps journey is around November, my senior year in college, where I kind of made this decision that yeah, I wanted to join the Marines. I wanted to get a commission to become an officer in the Marine Corps. My dad has been in the Marines for over 30 years now. He's still active duty. So I've had the privilege to grow up in a Marine Corps family, kind of experiencing what it is to be like in the Marines, except on the other side, not actually being a Marine, but seeing how this branch of the military kind of shapes families and also shapes individuals who serve in the Marine Corps. And seeing so many people growing up, you kind of learn like these people are squared away. They have their stuff together. And it also provides you with so many awesome opportunities. And what I did learn about myself in college was that I knew I wasn't going to be happy behind a desk. That wasn't going to fulfill me with any kind of accomplishment, but that's just how I am as an individual. I know that works for other people, but I knew that about myself. And so that's what it kind of clicked for me my senior year. I never thought I was going to do it because when I grew up, I hated moving around every 2 or 3 years. I just didn't like having to start all over and make brand new friends. But the older that I did get, the more I developed a sense of appreciation for this kind of lifestyle, because it was something that so many people don't get to experience, but it gave me so much more perspective on life and kind of how to handle situations. But so yeah, my senior year just kind of clicked, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna do it. I don't know if I'll like it, but hey, you know, I'm young, I have so much life ahead of me, I might as well just give it a shot and see what happens. So this past summer, I found out around July that I got accepted to officer candidate school. And this is essentially the first step to earning your commission as an officer in the Marine Corps. And it's a 10-week program. It's pretty much where you are stripped of your civilian habits and ways, and they break you down. And then you're built up with a Marine Corps mindset. So you're really hammered into the Marine Corps' values, honor, courage, commitment, like how you apply those. We were taught like basic tactical skills. And then eventually, after you get through this 10-week program, you earn your commission as a Marine Corps officer. And it was one of the best days ever when I finally graduated, because OCS, it's 10 weeks. 10 weeks doesn't seem like a long time, but when you're at a place such as that, time really drags on. And the biggest thing that really just kept me going in that place was your support system. And one of my biggest support systems was Wrightsville Beach Ocean Rescue. And every single time I got mail, somebody from WBOR sent me a letter, and it didn't matter who it was or what the letter said, but just knowing that I had this giant network behind me supporting me, easy. It was easy to get through it with a support network such as that. And then right after OCS, you did it, you got your commission, then you go to the basic school. And both of these are at Quantico, Virginia. So right now I'm about halfway through the basic school. And this is like, it's a 7-month long course, essentially, where the newly commissioned officers are indoctrinated into the Marine Corps. And it's a school that is designed to develop leaders. So what makes it unique is that it teaches leadership through constant practical application in the classroom. And then once we learn these applications, we take what we learned and then we go out to the field for like a week, and we apply everything that we learned, and we get to use it and test these skills in the field, which it can be fun, but it can also get a little challenging depending on what, you know, human factors you face, such as like weather, food, hygiene, stuff as that. But it's really unique compared to other branches, because the basic school is where the Marine Corps trains every officer how to be a infantry rifle platoon commander. So what makes that unique, it doesn't really matter what route you take after TBS, you might become a logistics officer or a communications officer, and you're not necessarily going to be doing infantry stuff, but you still have the capability to go and lead a infantry platoon if you had to do that. So that's what really kind of sets it apart from other branches. And that's where I'm at right now. I'm about halfway through that school, and I'm set to graduate the end of June. So just keep on trucking down that path right now.
Incredible. So incredible. And having worked with you, having competed with you and trained with you, like, you are one of the most gritty people I've ever been around. Like, your work ethic is super tough. All the people that we know would say the same thing. Now, when you first got into the, when you drove in, when your dad dropped you off, I assume for that first day, like, were you nervous? And then what did you find about yourself that you didn't already know?
Yeah. So, the first day of officer candidate school, I drove myself there. I drove from Raleigh, North Carolina, to Quantico. And the first day, man, I really didn't know what to expect. I knew it was going to be like a super, super challenging thing. But what I've learned about myself was that I really loved a challenge, and I loved getting to like that, like the end of the challenge and just having that feeling of accomplishment. So that was something that I knew going into it that could also like keep me kind of going throughout this whole thing. But pulling it, so they have you, you drive over these train tracks, and everybody there calls it like you cross the train tracks, and once you're over, like, you're not getting back out unless like you get dropped from the program or you graduate. So I drive over the train tracks, and then some people take a bus to OCS. So I drive past a bus, and then you're already seeing, they called us candidates. So you see these candidates getting off the bus. They're already getting yelled at, and I'm just driving my car like, oh, like, this is really, it's happening. And then they like point you into a parking spot. You get out of your car, you grab your stuff. You're like, let's go. Like they're already like, you know, kind of yelling at you. And I was automatically like right off the bat like overwhelmed. But the biggest thing that like your recruiter tells you, and so much advice that I got prior to going into it, was it's a giant game, and you just have to play the game, really. Because you, if you go into it and you let like really little things, like they single you out or they yell at you for something, like it's really no big deal. You just have to, it's like, it's their job, that's what they're supposed to do, and you kind of have to look at it through that lens. And just know that it's a game. And something I learned about myself there, that I don't really think I knew about myself in the real world, was just you can't let your emotions really take over at times during high stress. And yes, like prior to going there, I've been in high stress situations, but really nothing like what they kind of put you through there. And very early on, I learned that you have to be able to detach, like take what you're feeling. Like you can be so overwhelmed, like, but you can't let that affect like your judgment. You can't let yourself get foggy. And that's when you just kind of have to take like what you're feeling and just throw it away, like deal with it later, and like face what you're facing head on. And you just go through it with a clear mind. And learning how to detach from your emotions was huge. And that was a big key going through the program there.
And how did you learn that? Did you develop that yourself, or did your dad teach you some methods, or what were the methods?
Yeah. So, pretty early on, maybe like the second or third week at OCS, we were issued our M16s, and I've never really dealt with weapons before, in my life. Like I went duck hunting once, but like I've never really been into shooting or anything, so I didn't really know how to work a weapon. And we were learning how to like load a magazine in, and kind of what to do if you get a weapon malfunction. And it was like I was asking a question, which I learned really quick, like this isn't really a place to ask questions in the beginning of it, at least. Like you just do what you're told. And I did something wrong. Like I took out the magazine when I wasn't supposed to or something. And my staff sergeant saw, like got really, really mad at me, started yelling at me. And this was like the first time that I was really like singled out and like really called out for something. And I totally broke down. Like I couldn't control my emotions. I got really, really flustered. She made me face the wall and like stare at a wall for a little bit. And I just was like, couldn't get control of my emotions. And then my platoon commander came over, and she actually was the one who told me, she's like, hey, when things like this happen, like you can't let your emotions take over. You can't let people see you like that. Like if something's upsetting you, you take that, push it away. You can deal with it in a couple hours, like when you're going to bed or when you have downtime. But when it's happening to you right now, like you don't let that control you. Like you're so much bigger than that. And that's like when it kind of clicked. And this was kind of in the beginning of it too. And it's like, she's so right. Cause there's so many things that aren't as big as doing a like, you know, messing up, putting a magazine in or something. And it's something so much more serious, but you can't let those emotions really affect your judgment or what your decision making is.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Cause I know everyone listening probably has parts in their life where they can look back and maybe future instances where they can use that information and handle stress. Yeah. So you're a water person to the core. How did you deal with not having your pool time, your swim time, your beach time? Tell us about that.
I love that you asked that because that was like the biggest struggle that I had. Still going through it right now because I'm so landlocked, and it really did not hit me how much that bothered me until I was like a couple weeks in. And then you really think, it's like, oh my gosh, like for years I've seen the ocean at least like once or twice a week. And then in the summer, every single day, like you make it a point to get to the ocean because like, for me, like I'll get in the ocean, like I'm me, like I feel at peace. Nothing can touch me right now. Like, and then going to, you know, the middle of Virginia, and it's like, whoa, like there's no ocean around here. I'm not swimming every day. And so that was really weird because I've swam competitively for 16 years. And when I was done this past February, you know, with swimming competitively, I still had ocean rescue to do PT every morning with people, like maybe go to a master's practice. Like swimming was still very constant for me all the way up until I started the Marine Corps journey. And it was just, it was tough. Like it's still tough, but the really cool thing is that I have found like ocean people here. And it was really interesting to me because you find these people who also have like a very strong connection and respect for the ocean. And you kind of gravitate towards these people, which was nuts to me because I met like other ocean rescue Marines who like were from Delaware or South Carolina. And it just like kind of pops up in a conversation. And then you're like, oh, like, so you've been to comp, like you understand this and this and this. And then like some people, like they're going to drive to Virginia Beach this weekend because they needed the salt water, you know? So it's just, it's really cool to meet other people who have such like, they understand like that connection to the ocean. And it was really bizarre to me that like we found each other, like the ocean people found each other without even knowing really before. And, but I thought that was so special because like, there are people that you don't really get it. Like you're not an ocean person, you're a mountain person or like a city person, but then like, you know, you're ocean people. And that I thought was like one of the coolest things ever.
So tribal, so incredible.
Yeah, for sure.
So do you have a pool there, or I would think that would be part of the training, swimming, is it not?
Yeah. So they actually have different levels of, like swim qualifications. We, so far we've only done our basic swim qual, but essentially like what these tests kind of look like is you're in your full camis, your boots are on, and you jump off a high dive, like kind of work your way to the other side of the pool. Another exercise that you do, you put on a weighted vest and a Kevlar, which is like a helmet, like the bulletproof helmet. And then you get a fake rifle. And you have to go underwater and be able to take off all your gear under 10 seconds. And then you have to be able to kick like an assault pack, which is kind of like, it looks like a backpack. You just kick that to the other side of the pool. So really that's the only extent that we have gotten. But the longer that you stay in, the more, if you wanted to advance to like an advanced swim instructor and teach those classes, you could. So it really just depends on if you are interested in that stuff. You absolutely have the opportunity to go do that. It's called McQuist. So you can be McQuist certified. And that's something I'm definitely interested in. I just don't have the time to do it right now, but down the road, I'd love to do that.
And when they called you to go do that, were you just like super stoked?
Super, super excited. And like a lot of my friends I've made, they know like that I was a swimmer. I love the ocean. I did ocean rescue. So they're just like, oh, like this is her thing. Like it'll be fun for her. And everybody else kind of hates like getting in the pool, but it's definitely like, it's where I thrive. So I had a lot of fun doing that.
What's that facility look like?
So the pool that we went to right now, the basic school that's on Camp Barrett. And that's where we live, where we do all of our work, and field exercises. And they have a gym there, Raymer Hall, and they have a pool, like, they have a pool at the gym. It's nothing fancy or anything, but just like a really deep pool in order to get training done. But nothing crazy really.
Sick. So you're from Emerald Island, Isle, right?
Yes.
Tell us about your early days down there at the beach, growing up at the water. Who were the people who really influenced you to be a water person? And what did that trajectory look like to becoming the competitive swimmer you became?
Yeah, so living in Emerald Isle, I was only in North Carolina for my 4 years of high school. And prior to that, we moved all over the place. So super, the best thing about the Marine Corps is it's an amphibious force. So pretty much you are guaranteed to go to Marine Corps base that's by some kind of coast. And growing up, we were in North Carolina for a little bit, went to Virginia for a little bit. And then we went to Hawaii for 2 years. We were in San Diego for 3 years, Rhode Island 2 years, and then back to North Carolina. So really just growing up at all these places, like right by the ocean, whether it's the Pacific or Atlantic Ocean, it was always there. And my family, we are such like a big ocean and water family that was something that we prioritized wherever we moved. And whether it's swimming, my dad is super into deep sea fishing. So we'd always make a point to go fishing wherever we were. And just being by the ocean, definitely I remember there in second, third grade. So I was still pretty young, but I still remember getting to go like cliff jumping and you go snorkeling, like the most beautiful thing. And then in California, I was there for my middle school years. And those years I did the junior lifeguarding program with Camp Pendleton. And that program I did 3 summers and it was a 5 week long program. So it kind of just took up your whole summer there. And that program for sure like shifted kind of my whole mindset on the ocean. I was doing club swimming then too. So like I'd go from morning practice and then straight to junior lifeguarding. And I just remember like it was really cool to be able to get into the ocean and then, you know, swim out to a buoy and you look back and you just see like the shoreline and it looks so far away. I still remember that. And like when I was like 10 or something and like thought it was just the coolest thing. And then we also got to do a lifeguard comp during that time too. So I was kind of like introduced to that world like so early on, no idea that like I make a full circle and go back to it. But just really developing a respect for the ocean during that time, like how much it kind of gives to you. And it's just like, it's a very humbling experience. Going into something that like it could take everything away, but you have to just really respect it. And then like still forming a really good relationship with the sport of swimming as we would move everywhere, because we wouldn't be anywhere for longer than 3 years. And moving that often, like I did find I had very few constant things in life. And one of the really constant things I could always depend on, of course, was my family. But the other one was really just swimming. It was like whenever I moved, I knew that I'd have my family and I knew I would find a new club team to be a part of and I'd have a sport. And so just having swimming to fall back on wherever I was, because it's such, I know that you swim all the time too. And, you know, I'm sure once you get into the pool and you swim for like an hour, it's kind of nice because you're staring at a black line, but like, you're in your own head and you get to think about like anything that you want. And it really is a time for you to reflect on, you know, like maybe what you've done, what you want to do, like how your day was. And you can't, like, you don't really get that with any other sport. And it was just like, it was something that I fell in love with over the years. And being able to swim on a club team, swim in the ocean. And then that's kind of where I met like my people too, wherever I went, was it was the swimmers. And so that kind of was what really solidified like my love for the sport. It was something that's always been there for me. And then same thing with the ocean. Like I, everywhere I go, like I can go to the ocean. It's like, okay, like I'm home. Here's the ocean. Yeah. But that's really what kind of drove my love for that stuff.
Epic. And you have a brother, right?
So I have two brother-in-laws.
Two brothers.
And yeah, and I have two older sisters. So there's three girls total, and then both two brother-in-laws.
And were they swimmers also?
So my oldest brother-in-law, he was not a swimmer, but he did
I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm thinking more along lines of your sisters growing up with you. Were they influential in your swimming?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So my two older sisters, they did club swimming too, but the older they got, the more that they, you know, they kind of decided they weren't that interested in really taking it to the next level. When we lived in California, they were both in high school, and they chose to do the water polo route, which a lot of people said in California, like the club swimmers would say, once you like move to the water polo side of things, like you join the dark side, because like water polo is going to mess up your stroke and all that stuff. But so they really liked water polo. And then by the time they both went off to college, neither of them pursued a sport in college. But we always, like growing up, my mom would always bring us to swim practice together. And it was definitely, it was a fun time when we all did it together, but they didn't want to continue it that much farther past high school.
Well, it sounds like you were super motivated intrinsically yourself from an early age. It wasn't like your parents were pushing it on you. They were supportive of you, and I'm sure, but like you really found this love. And just to hone it down, it sounds like the love is all about that, the thing it does to the mind, swimming.
For sure.
As far as bringing you to a place of reflection and then accomplishment when it's done. And I think that's just such the most beautiful thing about the swimming. Even as an old man as I am today, that I find that same joy. And for a young person to discover that, I think is beautiful. I have, you know, young children myself, and I'm just like hoping they can figure this out, because a lot of kids they don't, you know, in this time of technology, they don't get the boredom factor and how valuable that is, and how much solace you can find in that. But back to all these locations. So was the Camp Pendleton, that's in San Diego, am I right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so San Diego has, like, there in Maryland are some of the biggest swimming hubs in the country and in the world. So you really got, like, ground zero at a perfect age for really high-level swimming. What did you see there when you first started competing that really, like, honed you into the love of competition, and what was it that you loved so much about those early years competing?
Yeah, so kind of like you just said earlier, was I was able to discover this love for the sport without you know, like my parents really forcing that on me. And that's something that I really, really appreciated. And I didn't really see it till I got to like my end years of college, was that my parents, they're my biggest supporters. And throughout all my years of swimming, they never, ever put any pressure on me to be, you know, like the one who's breaking all the records, the best athlete in the pool, like making me go to all the practices and then training by myself. Like they always, the only thing that they cared about was that I was having fun and that I loved what I was doing, which I think is really, really special, because that was something that, like, if you put all that pressure on someone to be the best and they're not, you know, living up to the standards that you want, that's going to totally, totally just cause them to burn out, I think. Because if you really put that much pressure on yourself, if you don't love what you're doing, is it really worth it? Because then it's like, it's kind of just building up and maybe degrading like what like the actual sport is. And so that was like the biggest thing for me, was just having fun with it. And then going back to those really early years, like a great example that I have of this is one of the first swim meets I did in Hawaii. I still remember it. It was at the University of Hawaii, like giant outdoor pool, beautiful. It was even like, I still remember, like, I think I was doing the 100 IM and I had to write down the order of strokes that the event did. So like, I had like butterfly, backstroke, breaststroke, freestyle written down just in case I forgot. And so I go do the event. I'm in like second grade. And something happens, I get disqualified. And it was the first time that I ever got disqualified. And like, I started crying. I was really upset. Like, I didn't, like, what happened? And I told my mom, I was like, he told me, like, I'm DQ'd. Like, what is, like, DQ'd? And she's like, oh, that means we're going to Dairy Queen. Like, she's like, you're so lucky. Like, we're going to Dairy Queen. I was like, oh, okay. Like, and like, that's just like, it was a great example of, it's like, oh no, like you got DQ'd, you're going to go like back to practice. Like, it's so bad. I can't believe you. No, it's like, we're going to go get ice cream now. So like, that was, swimming's just always been fun. And I think that's a great example of kind of like the parenting style that I got behind this sport, was just like, it's like, no pressure. You did good. Like, we're really proud of you. Like, that's awesome. Your hard work has paid off. Or it's like, you didn't do good, no big deal. Like, that's more of an incentive to work harder and get it better next time.
So, such a great story. So you lived in Hawaii also?
We did, yeah. We lived there when I was in second and third grade. Yeah, so not like that early, or not that recent, but I still remember little parts of it.
And then you hit California.
Yep, we hit California right after that. And then directly after California, we were in Rhode Island. And then right after Rhode Island, we were there for 2 years. That's when we moved to North Carolina. I was there for all of high school, and then got to go to Wilmington for college. Fell in love with North Carolina.
Yeah. So you swam also in Rhode Island.
Yep. Yeah. Swam everywhere that we moved. Yeah. Yeah. That was the fun stuff.
So for those listening, Emerald Island doesn't have, I don't know, an aquatic center, do they? Like, where were you swimming in the winter in when you got, you know, into your high school career? Because that's such a big time for a swimmer.
For sure. So living at Emerald Isle, I was on the club team called East Carolina Aquatics. And we were in Cape Carteret, and this was one of their sites. So oftentimes a lot of club teams, they have different sites in different locations. So that way, like, if we did have a home meet, like, everyone would meet at ECU. Like, that's where, like, the main site was in Greenville. So one of their sites was in Cape Carteret, and that's where Emerald Isle is. It's part of Cape Carteret County. And they had different indoor pools. We had two indoor pools that we'd go to, one in Moorhead City, and then, which is about 30 minutes away from Emerald Isle, and then there's one right in Cape Carteret, like, 5 minutes away from Emerald Isle. So we had flip-flop pools that we would go to. And sometimes too, like, if it was in the summer, we would get to do like open water practices, because it is like, it's such like a coastal Carolina town. You might as well take advantage of that. And that was something that I really got into too in high school, was doing the open water races. And because I just loved being in the ocean. So it was right up my alley. And but mostly just like indoor pools at gyms and stuff. Nothing crazy.
So your dad was stationed at Camp Lejeune?
He was, yeah. For those 4 years, he was at Camp Lejeune. And then when I went off to college, my parents officially became empty nesters. And they moved up around here to Alexandria. He worked at the Pentagon for 2 years. And then directly after that, they were back at Camp Lejeune for 2 years. And just this past summer, they moved back out to Camp Pendleton. So right now they're in San Diego.
Sick. So I'd like to know, when did UNCW get on your radar as the place you wanted to spend your swimming career? Because I'm sure you You came in hot. You had a lot of credentials behind you with your times. You probably could have gone to a lot of places. What made UNC Wilmington the place you wanted to be?
Yeah, so this one's kind of an interesting story. You know, I've just talked about how much swimming has done for me and how much I loved it. But there was an off year that I had, which was my senior year in high school. And I kind of fell out of love with the sport. And I kind of took a step back. I went to like one or two practices a week. And I decided like, no, like not going to swim college. Like I've already done it for, you know, 11, 12 years. I wanted to like do the college experience where you go, like just be a college kid. And so I got into UNCW and I applied to the school because it was a North Carolina school and it was by the beach. Like I did not think I was going to go there. And I texted one of my club coaches who coached me my sophomore year in high school. And then he ended up moving to Raleigh for a different job opportunity, but he had a giant impact on me. His name was Brandon Hicks, and he swam for UNCW, and he also did WVOR for a couple summers. So, like, he's told me about, like, his experiences at UNCW, like, how much he's loved it. So I texted him when I got in. It's like, hey, like, just got to UNCW, like, go Seahawks. Like, didn't know if I was going to go there or not, and he texted me back. He's like, hey, like, that's awesome. Are you thinking about swimming there? And I was like, oh, like, no way. Like, I'm not really into swimming anymore. Like, just want to let you know. And he's like, okay, well, I think that, like, it's right up your alley and you would love it. Like, one of the coaches there right now I swam with in college, like, let me just see, like, if you could, like, go on a trip. And I was like, okay, like, sure. And so then, like, a week later, I'm going on my one and only recruiting trip. And I go to UNCW. And it was, I think, like a 48-hour visit. I wasn't there for long, but I had so much fun. Like, it was, I, like, had the best weekend ever. I felt like, I was like, these are my people. And, like, Wilmington's so cool, and the beach is right there. And, like, when I was leaving, I was like, oh, my gosh, like, I don't even want to leave. Like, I had a blast. And I met, like, so many of my friends I had all throughout college, and I still talk to today. Like, I met them on that trip. And then, like, a week later, I got a call from the coach, and, like, they happened to have a spot open up, and, like, they're like, do you want to be on a team? I was like, heck yeah. So, like, and then I committed, I got to be on a team, and, like, it was awesome. It was totally, totally awesome. And the really fun thing, too, was, like, my times that I had in high school, they didn't really meet the standard. Like, they were close, but, like, they're nothing, like, amazing, you know? And all throughout college, like, it was really awesome because I got to see, like, all, like, the hard work kind of pay off throughout the years. And I shaved off a bunch of time from high school, which was awesome. But it was awesome. Like, it was such a God thing, I think. Like, I just I got really, really lucky with how the circumstances were. And I really have Brandon Hicks to thank for that, because without him, like, I really wouldn't have pursued that path. And I don't even know if I would have gone to UNCW. But he single-handedly changed, like, the whole trajectory of my life. And forever, like, I'm forever grateful for him. And, you know, that kind of just taught me that one person can – they can change your whole life if they really care about you. And they see something in you, and very, very important and special to me.
Well, I know Brandon Hicks. That's mm-hmm. That's an incredible story. It sounds like he was your true guardian angel there, in
for sure,
in guiding you. Just to follow back a little bit, what was it at the end of your senior year about swimming that kind of got you down on it?
We got a new coach, because it was the coach who took over Brandon's spot. And there's sometimes, you know, you don't really click with a coach. Nothing against him, but our personalities didn't really mesh. Like, my drive for the sport just kind of just like dwindled out, and I didn't really have a spark for it anymore. But, you know, looking back on that, I'm super grateful for having that kind of, like, plateau in my swimming career, because, you know, taking that break off kind of allowed me when I got to UNCW, it was like, okay, I'm ready to go. Like I'm ready to crush this, because it's been like, I felt like it's been so long since like I've really been into it. And like, I felt like I had so much to give, because I did, you know, take that break, and that really gave me like fuel to the fire. And a lot of times, when you do a Division I sport, it doesn't matter what the sport is, you kind of, there's people who come into the sport and they've been taking the sport so seriously for so long that, you know, that might eventually lead to burnout, which unfortunately, like, I've seen it like a couple times, because like, you know, maybe they're doing like morning practices, like doubles every single day of the week in high school. And in my opinion, like, that's awesome. That's really cool. Like, if that's what you want to do, go for it, do it. Like, you have like that capability and you're in that headspace to do it. But for me personally, like, that I wouldn't have enjoyed that if I did that in high school. And so that kind of allowed me, when I got to college, I was ready to like commit myself to that D1 lifestyle, where all you really do is, you know, like, eat, sleep, breathe, swim. And so I really enjoyed it. But I was lucky to have that weird break, and because it was the perfect thing for me. It might not been the perfect thing for the other person who's doing doubles all the time in high school, like, that's what they do. But it was the perfect situation for me, I think.
Well, you've gone on to see a lot of successful people in
definitely
swimming, and you know their stories. Is that a hallmark of them? Like, it's because swimming is so hard. If you grind and grind and grind, you eventually break. And if you're doing it early, it's almost like you can't do it later. And so how does that work? Like, do you see a lot of people who can just keep grinding, or is the hallmark of the individual who is really successful at the later stages of is one that kind of like has fun early, then goes on to take it super seriously? Or like, what have you seen?
Yeah. So I think when it comes down to that stuff, it totally depends on the person. It's swimming. Like you said, it is such like it's a grueling sport. You have to be willing to dedicate like not all your time, but a lot of time into this sport. And it's not even, you're dedicating time like, okay, 2 hours out of the day to practice and like, I'm good. No, you have to dedicate time to, I'm going to bed tonight at 8 o'clock because I have practice in 8 hours and I need to get like my full 8 hours so my body can recover. And you have to dedicate to, okay, I'm going to eat right. Like, because what you're putting into your body is fueling you for your next 2-3 hour practice. So, you know, you just kind of, you have to think about, these things, but it totally depends on the person. For me personally, I think, when I look at my success, I think my biggest success was that I was able to have fun. And I think it really just comes down to that. Like, yeah, having fast times or, you know, beating my own records, like, that's awesome. And I loved being able to do that and seeing self-improvement, because that's one of like my biggest things is being able to self-improve. But one of my other biggest things is having fun. And I think when it really depends on how you measure success. So if measuring success for you is, you know, seeing those times, like seeing those tangible goals being accomplished, then that's that person, you know, and that's how some people operate. But for me, it was just kind of like, if I still love the sport and if I'm having fun with it, you know, then I was successful in my eyes. So I think it really comes down to the person.
Well, you went on to break records. I believe you have a 105 something in the 200 free record still holding. So guys out there listening, girls, she's got numbers on the board to prove it, aside from the fun she's had. So it's just so incredible. Now, Tink, what, it's 2019 you entered UNCW, or 2020?
Yeah.
Okay.
2019.
2019, and had Bobby Gunturo, was he your first coach, or did you have the his predecessor, or excuse me, the person before him?
So coming into UNCW, we had a different coaching staff than they have right now. I had the coach prior to Bobby, for my freshman year, and we got along great. Like he was my head coach. He coached me every day. I had a good relationship with him. So, as soon as COVID hit my freshman year, like that's, you know, everyone knows, like that's when the world stopped. Our season stopped, college pretty much stopped. And this was, looking back, it was my biggest challenge. So, during my 4 years, and I think it was the biggest thing that really, impacted me, during the sport, and kind of tested what I truly wanted to do with the sport. And the biggest thing was when the season did stop and they did have that turnover with the swim team, getting a completely new coaching staff. And this is when Bobby did come in, and the whole entire culture of the team kind of was just like flipped upside down. And it was a completely, completely new team. It was hard for me because a lot of my best friends on the team, they decide to go separate ways with the team, like not really into swimming anymore. So that's kind of like when I was not like, I was kind of struggling with, because it's hard when you have all your best friends leave. And then, you know, on top of that, your season isn't really secured. We're getting breaks every 2 or 3 weeks when we were allowed to swim again because of COVID. But looking back on it, all these changes, they were for the better. And you might not be able to see that when things are happening. And that kind of applies to life too. Like you might not realize when you are going through big changes, they may suck at the time, but then you look back on it and it's makes you grow, because, you know, change is inevitable, but growth is optional. And it's how you view that stuff. And during that time when Bobby did come in, totally creating the new era, the new dynasty of the swim team. And the more I bought into that, the more I became really invested in the team, and the more I wanted to be a part of like building this program to be like the best that they could be. So I just like completely, completely bought into it. My love for the sport like was just growing bigger and bigger and bigger. And Bobby, he was an awesome, awesome coach. I had the incredible opportunity to be coached by him for 3 years. And what I loved so much about him was his coaching style. And he took so much time with me to develop me as an athlete. And yes, he cared about like the results that I was putting on the board. Like that's a huge part of it, but I knew he cared more about me, like my well-being, and he cared about not just developing me as an athlete, but also developing me as a young adult. Like he cared about stuff that wasn't swimming. So I think that was a huge, huge piece, because if you have a good relationship with your coach, like you want to do good for them, you want to do good for the team. So it may have been like not a good time when the whole COVID thing and coaching staff turned over, but looking back, it's like that huge change was what slingshotted UNCW swim and dive forward onto this awesome path. And you can see that in the results that the team has put out. The men's swim team, the past 3 years, they've gotten CAA champions, which hasn't happened so many years before. Before that started back in 2022. And then the women's team, past two years, have gotten the CAA championship, which is absolutely awesome. They, I believe last year, when the women and men's team won, that was like the first time in 16, 17 years, I think, since that's ever happened. So just being able to be a part of that was really, really special.
So Bobby Gunturo, a former guest on this program, those listening can turn back and check him out. He's from Indonesia, comes to UNCW and was a swimmer himself in very recent times. you know, 10 years ago, he was there swimming just like you. So yep. He had this very recent knowledge of what it was like to be coached and what it took to coach, as he had just come from state coming into COVID. And mm-hmm. I was actually DMing with him last night in preparation for this episode. And I asked him to say something. So this is a quote from Bobby. Tink is one of the best team captains I've ever had. Her laid-back personality and intense work ethic was a perfect sorry, I have a visitor.
Oh, you're good.
1 second, sir. Her laid-back personality and intense work ethic was the perfect compilation that we needed in a leader to win our first championship since 2006. And that's right. You came in with this new attitude and you brought it mm-hmm. forward. Now you said something a few minutes ago that really stuck, and that was the word culture. And I remember speaking with a lot of swimmers during that time in 2019, and they weren't very happy with where the culture was. And not to disparage the previous coach or anything like that, but speak to culture and what it takes to have a positive culture in all these organizations. You know, you've been in Ocean Rescue, you've been in the UNCW swim team, and now in the Marine Corps. What is it with culture that gets individuals to come together and work hard at an excellent level?
Yeah, so culture, I think, is a huge part of any organization. Specifically, UNCW Swimming and Diving, WBOR, both of those programs had a lot of parallels in my eyes, being that they both had amazing cultures. And the culture on both these teams, it was really just a family. Coming up on the pool deck, you know, you could look around, you know, you can go to any one of those teammates, talk to them about anything, talk to your coaches about anything. And then same thing with WBOR, showing up to work. Like, you know, you see someone, you're going to have a great conversation with them. Like, that's the really cool thing about Ocean Rescue was you have so many like-minded individuals all with the same mindset. Everyone on that team is they are a stud, and they, you know, they have such a mindset that they want to pursue self-improvement. They want you to succeed just as much as, you know, the individual person. But I really think having a great culture on a team really comes from everybody investing into that program or that organization and all kind of going after the same goal. Whether for, you know, UNCW swimming and diving, you have that goal of being the CAA conference champions, and everybody there knows that their individual actions affect that success. And I think it's, are you willing to buy into that and strive for that excellence? And then, you know, you have Ocean Rescue, where everybody there, everybody loves to work, you know, everyone loves to come to work. And the goal there is, you know, you're giving back to your community, you're helping your community, you are safeguarding Wrightsville Beach. And there's something super special about that. And I think that's what kind of drives everyone there, is everyone has that passion to safeguard this beach that we call home. And then you have the Marine Corps, which everyone has, like, they have that passion to serve and to make a difference. And that's kind of the underlying culture of all these things, is people buy into the program and just having that mindset of you do want that individual success, but you care more about the success of the person to the left and to the right of you. So I really think it comes down to being in that family and having a culture and a bond through that.
And
for sure.
Let's speak to the winning and to the losing. When you're that is the heart of the competition, is seeing where you stack up. Can you speak to what you love most about competition?
Yeah, for sure. So competition, something that has always driven me, but more so the biggest thing about competition that I really enjoy is getting to do that, or seeking self-improvement, really. I really think that is an important value in my life, or anybody's life, is just seeking self-improvement and trying to get better than you were the day before. So I think that's always kind of added the fuel to the fire for me. And something about competition that I've always loved is you kind of get to see, you see your hard work pay off. And that's, you know, that's noted in not just the times that you get, but also, you know, how your team's doing too, because their success is greater than your success in the end, I think. And my favorite thing about competition is, you know, just having that feeling of accomplishment. And I think about it all the time, and I really feel that during lifeguard comp, I think, more than anything else. And it's that feeling, I'm sure that you have felt it, but it's when, because Sean Ruckke is a beast, and he does every single event that he can in the age groups, and it was insane. I remember the first summer that I met you, and you came to Jacksonville Beach, Florida, when we did regionals. And I went up to you and was like, hey, like, I've heard about you, like, legend. And you lived up to legend, because every single time I looked up, you're doing some kind of event, like, you're carrying a board, you're about to go do a swim, you're going to do a run. Stacked up so many points. And so I think, but when I go back to that feeling of accomplishment at comp, it's that feeling when you are sitting in a beach chair and you're laying in the sun, and you know that you've given everything that you've had, and you just feel exhausted, but you know you've done your job. And it's just that feeling is awesome. And I like, that's my favorite thing I think about comp, is just getting that sense of accomplishment when you know you've given everything you have. And just, and then once you have that feeling, you know, it only lasts for so long. And then that gives you that, like, flip in your mind, like, okay, I want to get this feeling again. You got to work even harder. So for sure, that's my favorite thing about competition.
Well, Tink, you're very sweet to say such words, and you are spot on 100% right. The lifeguard competition for those 2 days, you push your body to a place where you just want to go all out and put it all on the beach and leave that beach feeling like you've done everything you can possibly do. And it is an amazing thing. And I will never forget meeting you for the first time in Jacksonville. That was a very special comp, because we had just gone through COVID. There had not been a comp the year before. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like a redemption. You know, everyone during COVID had gone through so much, and that particular comp was very special and unique. Let's go on to the Ocean Rescue, because you started Ocean Rescue in the COVID year, the first tryout where everyone had to go individually. For those of you listening, Wrightsville Beach Ocean Rescue does a tryout where if you want to join up, you show up at the beach at 8:30 in the morning, and you got to swim around the pier about 1500 yards down the beach, then turn and come in and run about a mile down the beach the other direction. And everyone does it in a pack, and it really separates everyone out between hard runners, hard swimmers. And it's an intense thing. But you did the first one where only new recruits were allowed to do it. You had to do it one at a time because of COVID restrictions. First, how did you find out about the Ocean Rescue to come in to do it? And then what was that first tryout like for you?
Yeah, so actually I came the summer after the COVID tryout. But I did hear from, I had multiple friends, Avery Gamble, Jack Cosgrove, Lucy Johnson, all fantastic lifeguards from Wrightsville. They all went through the COVID tryout, and I did hear how that was, it was an individual effort there. But so
2021 was your first year.
Yes, 2021. And so that was, I remember, is the first tryout that was normal again for you guys since the COVID year. But I did find out about Wrightsville Beach Ocean Rescue actually before I went to UNCW. So it goes back to, I think, around 2015 or 2016. And I signed up to do the peer-to-peer swim in Wrightsville Beach. I think I was 15 or 16 years old. And so I go do the peer-to-peer swim. And while I'm there, I see UNCW swim team, and it looks like they're having a lot of fun. And then I also see we're at Johnny Mercer's Pier. Great place, especially on 4th of July. So we're at Johnny Mercer's Pier, and I remember seeing a lifeguard. And if I remember correctly, I think it was Michael Thomas. And he had the black hoodie on. Hood on, you know, you have the big bold letters WBOR, the coolest uniforms out there for sure. And he was on the ATV right next to the pier, like moving people. And I remember seeing him, I was like, coolest uniform ever, like coolest job ever. I want to do that. And so then, like, the cars just lined up, and I ended up going to college there. And that was like, I think that was one of my biggest goals, was being able to join the squad. And I remember working up to that tryout. There was the documentary that was already out on Amazon Prime about you guys, like joining or making the squad. And I remember I watched that documentary like 5 times, just like studying how you guys do the tryout, like what they're looking for and all that. Like, and I'd go to the beach and like practice like doing the rescues and stuff. And so I was really nervous going into the tryout, just because it was something that I wanted so bad. And then I did the tryout, and I did good. And then eventually, like, I remember the day that they're making the phone calls, and like I remember the second I got the phone call, and it was Sam Prophet calling. He's like, hey, like, just gonna let you know you got the job. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, I'm so excited. And like, and Sam's like, okay, like, yeah, we'll see you on Monday. But it was like the best thing ever. My rookie summer was one of the best summers that I've ever had. But what I learned, like, I got to do 3 summers with WBOR, and every summer it just got better and better. And it was a really special job, because this program, it holds such an immense significance within the community of not just Wrightsville Beach, but Wilmington. And I really think it goes down to, it serves as a beacon of safety and inspiration for others on the outside, kind of just looking in. This program kind of shapes individuals into becoming the best version of themselves, whether that be through physical fitness, shaping, you know, young leaders. And Wrightsville Beach Ocean Rescue, they don't only like save lives, like, yes, that's the job, but they also like, they, it really impacts the workers being a part of this community. And I know you know this firsthand too, because you've been around WBOR, like one of the longest people I think that I've met, like. And it's really cool, because you take someone and you make them like a true protector of Wrightsville Beach. And there's something really, really powerful in that, I think. But my love for Ocean Rescue, like, it knows no bounds, and it really goes down to the people too. It really is, it's the people that make the job, and it's the best group of people that I've ever gotten to work with. And I think that will hold true till the day that I die. But it's an awesome job. Awesome.
Yeah, and just to throw more roses at WBOR, I, excuse me, came to the program in 2011, and I'd been a pool manager. I'd go home every year in my 20s and manage a swimming pool with kids and teach swimming lessons. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I, Cornelia, got pregnant with Neely in 2010. And she's like, you can't go in home anymore. I was like, well, I've always wanted to be a beach lifeguard. Like, she's like, well, go try out. And I, you know, pumped up a little bit, swam a little bit more. I'm like 30 years old, and I show up, and you know, there's Jeremy. He's on the beach. God bless Jeremy and Sam and Scott Anderson. And we do the tryout. I won my first one. It was a great one of my greatest accomplishments. You know, this is 2011.
Champion.
Yeah,
champion.
Dude, it was so sick. And I had a little bit of a triathlon background at that time, so I came in real trained up. And that was one of the best summers of my life. And I worked every day that year and had an amazing 4th of July with stories to be told on the beach. And and you hone it down to the people, the people that Sam and Jeremy and Dave Baker get into this program and qualify are some of the best individuals the universe has. And I've seen so many of these individuals go on to just do amazing things in all sorts of different careers. And Tink, you are one of the greatest that we've seen. You took
Thank
home
you.
The trophy of the head, the, excuse me, the Jeremy Owens, excuse me, it's called, remind me again,
it was the Jeremy Owens Excellence in Public Service
There
Award.
We go. And Jeremy took his life a few years ago during the COVID times. You weren't around during his reign, but he was one of the best. And you do epitomize everything he stood for. So, thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate that, Rakke.
Yeah, yeah. And it's been great serving with you and competing with you. So roses on roses.
Roses on roses, for sure. For sure.
Now it's gonna be a difficult not having you around. And do you plan on eventually coming back? You know, you're a young woman. Mm-hmm. You're in your 20s. Do you see yourself kind of going through your career and making a circle back? Is that in the cards, do you think?
Yeah. So coming into the Marines, you are. Right off the bat, you do a 4-year contract, and going into it, I wasn't sure if I wanted to do 4 years or 20 years, and I'm still not really sure, but that's kind of the beauty in it, is you do, like, you get to make that decision on your own. So I'm still kind of testing the waters to see what I want to do, but I do know 100% I'll be back at Wrightsville Beach Ocean Rescue one day. It is the coolest thing about that job is the people there. Like, you have so many people who they have been in my position. They've done a couple summers, they've left, they've started some kind of new career, and then have come back. I think a great example and an inspiration of that to me is Sydney Hay. She did, her couple summers at WBOR and then went off to become a pilot, which is amazing. And then I met her my first summer, and she had come back. She still does Wrightsville Beach Comp. She's an absolute beast, and but a huge inspiration to me, and kind of gave me, like, drove me down the path that I did. She was one of the many individuals who influenced and inspired me. That it's okay to leave, and that if you really want to, you can absolutely come back, and they're gonna have a spot for you, and you can go and go do comp again. And that was something that drove me to do this decision. And I remember saying goodbye to everybody this past summer. We were all at Lighthouse, or not Lighthouse, but we were at Sundays for, I'm pretty sure it was like Monday margaritas, and I remember leaving and saying goodbye to everybody, but it wasn't like I was, like, crying or like dying, because it was more like, all right, like, I'll be back, like, and I think there's something special in that, because I know that I'll be back, and it won't be this summer, it won't be next summer, but I'll be back. And that's 100% my biggest dream and my biggest goal is to be able to come back one day and end up in Wilmington, because that place for sure has my heart, and it's where I feel like a pole too. So, for sure.
Epic. And yes, Sydney Korn previously. Hay, she was a rookie the same year I was a rookie, along with Kyle Hay. They didn't know each other, but you know, the rest is history. They're both married now. That's the power of the Ocean Rescue. And now, is there a chance that you could just make a cameo appearance at regionals or nationals this year, or are you tied up?
So I graduate the basic school June 28th, and I know regionals is usually like 2 weeks into July, and I don't find out where I'm going next until May. And that's when I find out like where I'll be moving and what specialty I'll be picking up within the Marine Corps. So if somehow my schedule lines up and like I have like if that weekend like I'm not really tied to anything, I'd love to go out to regionals or, you know, but it really the fun thing about Marine Corps is it keeps you on your toes and you are tied down to, you know, what they want you to do. So it's something that I wouldn't know until like a couple weeks out, but that would be pretty awesome if that lined up. I would love to come see you guys out there for sure. Will you be doing comp this year, Rod K?
Tink, I'm so focused on all this year, more so than I ever have been in my life. Like I'm swimming awesome. Hard. I'm running. I'm coming to tryouts with the best version of myself I can.
Let's go.
And okay. So yes, to answer your question, I'm also training Rob Brown for the Molokai to Oahu race. So he finds out if he gets into that April 1st, and wow. I'm gonna assist him if he gets in. Like he needs someone to jump off the boat during the thing multiple times to give him nutrition.
Wow.
So we're working together. We're building each other up, and that's mm-hmm. that's happening there. So yeah, regionals is high on the list there. Then mm-hmm. the Molokai would be in the middle, then nationals, and that's kind of like
wow
the schedule of events. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Well, that is incredible. That's awesome. I know you guys will absolutely crush it. Definitely give Rob Brown my best.
I will.
That,
I'll do that.
That's amazing. You guys will crush it for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And like before I let you go, I kind of want to, there's some particular questions about your day to day that I'm really interested in. Like what time are you waking up? What are you eating? Like what's your nutrition schedule like? And, okay. And like, what do you do in your downtime? Like, what is Tink looking at? Like, is she meditating or watching Netflix? Yeah. Like, what's going on when you have free time?
Okay, yeah. So, typical day to day here, it really, I mean, it changes every day. Which, kind of like that, you know, you're never really doing the same thing. It depends on what phase of the POI, and that's what we call this whole thing a POI, which is a period of instruction. So it's broken up into four phases. Right now, we just completed phase two, which was squad tactics. And we have now entered platoon size tactics. So we just entered that phase. And right now, we are in our classroom kind of chunk of that. And once we're done in the classroom, this upcoming week, actually, we'll be doing practical applications. And then once we finish with that, we'll be moving out to the field where we'll be doing an offense, defense, field exercise. We'll be out in the field for 2 weeks. And it's kind of like half the company will be on offense, the other half will be on defense. And we're kind of just like attacking each other to see, you know, like test what we've learned. So, I mean, as of right now, this past week, we've done a lot. We had four graded events. We got to go to a range and fire like an automatic grenade launcher. We got to do the 50 cal, heavy machine guns. So it really, it depends on, you know, what week it is, but, you know, you're usually waking up probably around like 4 or 5. It also, the thing about TBS is like your physical fitness, it's kind of up to you. So you might not have a lot of time, but you have to figure out when you're going to fit that in. And so usually I'll be waking up as early as I can to like fit in a quick lift or a run because you have to stay on top of that kind of stuff. And then as far as nutrition goes, it is tough to stick to like a really good clean diet. because you're living in the barracks and you don't have a kitchen. You have a microwave. But so you kind of have to get creative with what you're eating throughout the week. And I'm very fortunate because my oldest sister and her husband, they're in Alexandria right now, which is about an hour away from Quantico. So I'll come here on the weekends and I'll get to meal prep and stuff like that. So I do that because good nutrition, definitely key to success. That 100% impacts how you're feeling throughout the day, throughout the week, gives you fuel. And then whenever I do have downtime, really I use that time to reflect, like, what did I do this week? What could I do better? But more so taking that time to prepare and get ahead, because that's how you stay on track, especially for the basic school here. If you're not staying one, two steps ahead, you're going to fall really, really far behind really fast. So just always being on top of my stuff, reflecting on the schedule for the week ahead. And that was a huge thing for me in college too, was always every Sunday I'd look at my schedule and see what I had going on that week, so I could go into each day ready to tackle on, what I had to do that day. But also the biggest thing was being able to have fluidity with these plans and being able to be flexible and changing on a moment's notice. So that's definitely a huge thing too.
Wow. Such great advice that I know I'm going to take from that, because Sunday preparation for the week, got to stay ahead. So there's not a mess hall that they're feeding you food, or.
Yeah, so they do. They have a mess hall on Camp Barrett, but I've never been really a fan of the mess hall. But it has great food that you have, like healthy options you can get. I would rather prepare my own food, and
Wow.
because then you also have to spend like $8, $9 every single time you go to the mess hall. And saving money with meal prepping too, for sure.
So what does a tank meal prep look like? Like, what are you making sure you're getting in your body? I'm really interested in
Yeah.
this.
Yeah, so the biggest thing for me, my mom definitely like instilled this into my sisters and I when we were younger too. You always gotta have your carb, your protein, and your greens. So a meal prep for me might look like, chicken and rice and broccoli maybe, but just always and having like a colorful plate when you can. And then sometimes it can, like, when we're out in the field for the week, like last week we were in the field from Monday to Friday, and you have to bring food that, is non-perishable. So they'll give you a ton of MREs, which are meals ready to eat, and you'll get like a brown plastic thing, and on the front it might say like spaghetti and meatballs or something. So you'll get like a main meal of spaghetti and meatballs, and the expiration date is in like 2046. So, and then like you have all these snacks, but essentially when you go to the field, like you're moving all the time. Like you could be freezing, you could be cold, like your body's working just to like kind of like survive really out there. And so you just want to get as much carbs as you can in. What I've learned out there is like you have to remember to eat, because like there are times too, like when we'll be walking for like we're on like patrol like number three or something, and you've been walking for the past 7 hours in the woods, and it's like, oh my gosh, like I haven't eaten in like 5 hours, and you feel so depleted or dehydrated. So nutrition is a huge thing when you go out to the field. It's like you might not be able to, like eat your vegetables or, eat a good piece of chicken, but you have to just remember to continuously fill your body with carbs, or else like your body's going to shut down. And sometimes you unfortunately see that out in the field, people won't properly fuel their bodies, and that's when you kind of turn into like a casualty out there. And that was a huge thing that I kind of learned, is you have to stay on top of that when you're in the field and you have limited resources.
Has that happened to you yet?
No, I've been good about it. I have learned that I'm not a huge fan of MREs, so I try to avoid bringing those. And we've been in the field a lot now, so I have like my food down to like a pretty good science, but some of my favorite foods to bring out into the field is I'll buy like just like a giant pack of tortillas, ton of tuna fish packets, peanut butter. I love dried mango. Like you kind of get like healthy sugars there, I guess. And then like the go-go squeezes. And then I'll also bring like I really like the Airhead candies just for like a morale booster. Like when you're really cold at night or like you just see it, you know, like you hit a wall, it's like, oh, like let me break out my candy, and then like everybody else around you gets really excited. It's crazy what you'll get like really happy about in the field. But it's you definitely gotta think of like the morale boosters you can bring out there for your fellow Marines.
It sounds like your life has prepared you for this. All the grit from the swimming and the lifeguarding, the comp is kind of, you're doing a comp every single day almost. Like how hardcore the comp is, like is
For
it kind of
sure,
like that?
yeah. So lifeguarding and swimming, I think both of those lifestyles really go hand in hand with each other. And then, but living those lifestyles for the past 4 years, like absolutely, I've taken a lot from that, which has for sure like transferred into the Marine Corps world. A lot of once you're put into different kinds of billets here at like OCS and TBS, and a billet is where you're put into a leadership role for X amount of time and you're kind of getting to practice these skills. And so being like on UNCW swim and dive, like getting to be a captain, that was one of my favorite things. I loved being able to like watch the underclassmen beneath, like below me, kind of take off and look at their progress. And then I was really lucky too, with Ocean Rescue. Shout out to Sam Prophet and Dave Baker. Awesome leadership to follow right there. And they trusted me enough to put me into a leadership role pretty early on, but that kind of allowed me to build a lot of self-confidence myself because I knew that they believed on me. They believed in me, like regardless of any mess ups that I made in the past, they still had faith in me, which really it meant more to me than anything. And so just having like kind of allowed me to develop my leadership style a little bit, and being in these roles in college kind of transfer. They definitely transfer to the military because both those things you have to have. Be able to make quick decisions. You have to have those skills, and that definitely transfers into what we're doing now. And then being able to remain calm under pressure, and that was a huge one for lifeguarding. Like you might run into a terrible, terrible situation where you know, like somebody's dying, and you have to be able to be that person when everybody else is freaking out to just keep things level-headed. Like you can't be the person who is about now freaking out with everybody else, because then like that situation, it's not going to work, you know. Like you have to have the ability to be calm under pressure, have a level head. And then just being on a team, that's another huge one that's transferred to the Marines, with a huge emphasis on being able to collaborate with others, having a trust in between you and the person to the left and to the right, knowing that like you have each other's backs no matter what. And then just being able to cooperate with others too, that all has it's kind of weird how much it parallels to the Marine Corps. Like those things really like they really line up, and I'm really grateful for the life that I got to experience the past 4 years, because I do think you find a lot of these similarities, and you do have a feeling of like you've kind of been here before, but now you just get to refine these skills a little bit more.
So inspiring. And Tink, thank you so much for your service, for protecting our country and doing what needs to be done for our families.
Well, thank you, Raquel.
Before I let you go, what is the meaning of life according to Andrea Tink Niebel?
Great question. Great question. The meaning of life, you know, it could go so many different ways. And when I look back at my life, I think that the biggest thing that you can do is to just have fun. And it sounds really simple, but you just have to have fun with what you do. Because I think if you decide to do something that you are not enjoying and you don't love to do, you don't have any passion behind it, then what's the purpose? What's the point? And the thing about humans is everyone's always looking for a purpose. And that kind of drives you forward. And when it comes to me personally, I think you should find something that you really love and you care about and you're passionate about, because once you find that, you can absolutely, that attitude, it reflects outward. And when that happens, you have the ability to influence others around you. And maybe that attitude might change someone's opinion on something, or maybe you're able to influence someone to, unlock the best version of themselves. And being able to help people, I think it's really important to just be able to have fun. Don't take life too seriously. And just, sometimes you just have to take a leap. You might not know what will happen, but life is an adventure. Just go do what you want to do and have fun. Love it.
Epic. So incredible, Tink. Everyone, Tink, thank you so much, really, for spending this Sunday, now an hour and a half of your precious time. I guess you're in Alexandria today
Yes, I am. I am.
with your family. What's next for you guys? What are you going to be doing this afternoon?
So after this, I'm gonna head back to TBS, and like I said earlier, this Sunday is usually the day to get ahead, prepare for the week, see what I have going on, and that's what's on my agenda for sure.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, friends, thank you for joining us. This has been episode 47 of Speaking from Water with
Thank
Andrea
you,
Tink
Rocket.
Niebel. It has been an incredible one that I'm going to take so much from in my own personal life. And I hope you out there listening do as well. Don't forget to subscribe, give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. If you're listening or watching on YouTube, hit us up with a comment or a like. And with that said, I hope you have an epic Sunday or whatever day of the week or night, morning that you're listening. And with that said, peace.
Peace. Roque, thank you so much. It's been an absolute
Tink, that was a
pleasure.
banger. That was so sick. You crushed it.
Thank
And
you.
I'm just like, I'm in awe. I got chills. I got
Oh
chills.
my gosh.
And
Well, Roque, thank you.
I'm praying that I get to see you on the comp field, Beach Strand this summer.
Please.
That would be so incredible. Whether it's
Yeah.
nationals or regionals, whatever it is.
Oh my gosh, I hope so. I hope so. Yeah, but thank you so much for thinking of me for this. Like, I really am really honored that you asked me to do this. And it just, when I was going through these questions, like, it made me so happy to just think about like this part of my life, because it does bring me so much joy. And it's so great to talk to an ocean rescue amazing person, so it fills my heart up for sure. And you're doing great things. Like, all you've been crushing the podcast. Like,
Thank you. I've
I
really
see
like
them.
focused on it. It's
yeah
been
yeah
something I've been really working on, because there's so much to it. Because this will live in eternity. Like,
mm-hmm.
people will draw from this for as long as there's still internet, and that is
yeah
that's I think really cool. It's what UNCW really kind of instilled in me, and I'm sure you, is
Yeah.
being a lifelong learner, and you
Yeah.
never stop learning, and you always just gotta keep getting the information. And you are a water legend, and that's what this show is all about, is me finding the water legend and then bringing it to the people so the people can understand the mindset of the water legend, so they can become maybe a little bit of a water legend themselves, and that's why we do
That's
this.
that is awesome. Awesome. Yeah, so much respect for you, Raquel. And best of luck. I know that you're gonna crush the training. Can't wait to hear that you got first in the tryout. I expect nothing less. But
At this point, it's all about me just showing up proper, and we'll see where the
hey,
chips fall.
yeah.
I'm
That's all that
43, for God's
matters.
sakes, you know, like I'm just trying to get out there and just be tough as nails, you know,
Hey,
like
well,
you.
that is awesome. That's awesome. And I'm so excited to hear how you and Rob Brown do. That's awesome. Like incredible.
Yeah, he's really, really focused, working hard. He's going to the pool every morning at 5:30, and that's huge for old Rob
That's
Brown, you know.
awesome. It is.
Working on his stroke. Like, he's not a swimmer, you know, he's a big wave surfer. And it's really cool to watch. I'm doing sauna at his house every day, and that's been like
Oh
huge, or
my
the
gosh.
sauna. Like,
Oh
you do sauna ever? Have you ever done that?
I've done more. I'm more on the ice bath trend than the
If you
sauna
can
trend.
combo those things, that's what's
Really?
up. Oh, the dopamine
Okay.
goes through the roof. 'Cause like the
Oh.
sauna, you can get your heart rate up like zone six, just standing there. 'Cause try it. Like, I don't know if you have
Okay.
access to
Okay.
one, but like it's a workout just being in the sauna. And if you can combine it with some weights.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay, well that's good to know, 'cause like I've never really gotten on the sauna train.
Yeah, look into it. I've been doing deep research on it, and it's heavy. But
Okay. Awesome.
I got the sundae behind me,
Oh,
and
yeah. Have a great day with your
you
family.
too, you
And
too.
yeah, Reke, once again, thank you so much for having me. It's like made my week. So
Me
I'm
too. I've been looking
really
forward to
fortunate.
this. Yeah, and you crushed it.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Tink, and we'll check in with you later, and maybe a session two in the summertime to catch up.
Yeah, for sure. Tell everyone I said hello, and best of luck. I know your kids swim, so if they have any swim meets coming up or anything, tell them I said good luck. I know
I'll
they'll
do
crush
that.
it.
I'll do
Yeah.
that. All right.
All right. All
Peace
right.
out.
Good talking to you. Peace
Good talking
out.
to you, Tank. Later.